Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Edurent First and 15. Today, our guest is Dr. Mario Turri Zanoni, which is part of the team of the my maestro and the magnificent Professor Castelnuovo. Mario Turri Zanoni is a part of the as a consultant rhinologist of the University of Insubria from Varese. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mario is a friend of mine since many years right now, and I'm really glad to have him as guest today. And he's going to talk about a very interesting relation, different techniques and categories, which is basically he redefined since many years after a few studies that he forwarded and achieved on the medial maxillectomy. And today he's going to talk about different techniques and a new staging system that the University of Insubria developed. And I would briefly summarize it in different ways. And I hope that the participant will ask questions at the end of the meeting. Mario Turri just became part of the ERS Juniors, and he's a representative of the from Italy. And please start your, I would like to let you start your presentation.
Thank you very much, Puglia. So my presentation of today will be focused on endoscopic approaches to the maxillary sinus. And as you know, maxillary sinus is one of the most commonly approached paranasal sinus in surgery. And surgery of maxillary sinus became many years ago, basically in 18th, 19th century. And the first one who described a surgical approach to maxillary sinus was Caldwell and Luke. And they perform an opening of the maxillary sinus passing through the oral cavity. So they perform an incision at the level of the sublabial region, and they get access to the maxillary sinus, perforating the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus. The first one that introduced the concept to connect the maxillary sinus with the nasal fossa was Denker in 1906. He performed such a kind of surgery once again, transorally or transfacially. The surgeons that introduced the concept of transnasal approach were Sturman and Canfield. They performed the same surgical procedure as Denker described some years before, but they performed such a kind of surgery through a transnasal transvestibular incision. Many years passes from that time to now, and the introduction of endoscopic endonasal surgery has completely changed the world of surgery. And so, in recent years, the better understanding of the anatomy and the importance of mucociliary transport and the increasing importance of minimal invasive surgery, together with the introduction of endoscopic endonasal procedure, allows us to have a step forward in this kind of surgery. And so, at now, when approaching maxillary sinus, we will try to perform the less invasive procedure as possible. And so, in case of inflammatory disease, so for example, rhinosinusitis or nasal polyps, we try to open the maxillary sinus, paying attention to preserve the mucociliary transport and to open the natural ostium of the maxillary sinus. However, also in the era of minimal invasive surgery, there are some situations, for example, expanded endonasal approaches for skull-based surgery. There are some situations where we have to perform expanded maxillectomy, for example, to get access to deep-seated skull-based lesions such as infratemporal fossa, pterygopalatine fossa, nasopharynx. And so, or also to manage complex multi-compartmental tumors of the synovial and skull base area. So in such kind of cases, we have to perform expanded maxillary approach. Expanded maxillary approach has been already described since more or less 10 or 15 years, but there are a plethora of works and studies with conflicting data, and it's very difficult to compare case series one to each other because there is no criteria to classify expanded maxillary approaches. That's why here we propose a sort of classification system of the transnasal endoscopic maxillectomy in order to provide a tool for surgeons, a teaching tool for learn such a kind of surgical procedure, but also in order also to allow different centers to compare that data one to each other, because only speaking the same language we can compare data. So classification systems are useful in order to do a standardization of the surgical approach, but also to allow us to cooperate different centers together worldwide and to speak the same languages. And so we have classified such a kind of approach into four types according to the extension of the surgical resection. Of course, increasing the surgical exposure, there is also an increasing of the possibility to work and move inside to the sinuses, but also there is an increase of complication and morbidity for the patient. That's why we have tried to provide to our patient the less invasive surgical procedure as possible. So let's start with the description of the different classification systems. So the type 1 medial maxillectomy entails the removal of the superior portion of the medial wall of the maxillary sinus as far as the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus, being intact the integrity of the inferior turbinate. The type 2 middle maxillectomy is an extension of the type 1, an inferior extension of the type 1, with a resection of the inferior turbinate. In such a kind of procedure, we try to preserve the head of the inferior turbinate together with the nasolacrimal duct. The preservation of the head of inferior turbinate is quite important in order to prevent the so-called empty nose syndrome. So, type 1, extension to the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus. Type 2, inferior extension as far as the floor of the nasal fossa. In the type 3, the medial maxillectomy is extended anteriorly, and we have also to manage the nasolacrimal duct. We can cut the nasolacrimal duct, or we can skeletonize the nasolacrimal duct and transpose it and then re-put it in place. And so we have called such a kind of modification prelacrimal approach. So a standard type 3A medial maxillectomy entails the resection of the nasolacrimal duct. In the modified type 3A medial maxillectomy, we skeletonize and transpose the nasolacrimal duct. We get access to the maxillary sinus anteriorly to the nasolacrimal duct, but at the end of surgery, we re-put in place the inferior turbinate. We put a stitch at this level, on the level of the head of the inferior turbinate, and nasolacrimal duct is preserved. But in both of cases, resection or not of the nasolacrimal duct, we get access to the maxillary sinus anteriorly to the nasolacrimal duct. In the type 3B medial maxillectomy, also in this case, we manage the nasolacrimal duct, but we cut the nasolacrimal duct, and you see, also we remove this part of bone that is called piriform aperture. Removing this bone, we can move lateral the fulcrum of our surgical instrument inside maxillary sinus. Finally, the type 4 middle maxillectomy represents an enlargement of the type 3 and basically entails the removal of the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus. As far as the virtual sagittal plane passing through the infraorbital nerve, or theoretically, even more lateral to the infraorbital nerve course, the so-called procedure infraorbital nerve transposition. A modification of a type 4 medial maxillectomy is the opening of the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus just below the level of the infraorbital nerve, and we can get access maxillary sinus through these windows. It's a sort of Caldwell loop procedure, but performed transnasally under the endoscopic endonasal assistance. So every type of medial maxillectomy have specific indication of and contraindication and should be tailored to the patient disease and to the patient comorbidity, keeping in mind that more invasive will be your surgical procedure, more morbidity your patient will have. So we'll start analyzing the type 1 medial maxillectomy. Type 1 medial maxillectomy usually is indicated for inflammatory disease, for example, hantrocoanal polyps in child, or also massive nasal polyposis after many surgical procedures. After 3, 4, 5 surgical procedures, revision surgical procedure for nasal polyposis, we have to enlarge a lot the natural ostium of the maxillary sinus as far as the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus. In this example, this is a case of a young boy of 4 years old with nasal obstruction. MR scan showed that there is an inflammatory polyps in the maxillary sinus, which is an antrocoanal polyp. And so our surgery starting with the identification of the polyp, with the removal of a polyp abutting in the nasal fossa, and then a partial uncinectomy, so the inferior portion of the uncinate process has been removed as far as the identification of a natural ostium of a maxillary sinus. Usually, the pedicle of the polyps is between the accessory ostium of a maxillary sinus. So usually antrocoanal polyps come out from the maxillary sinus from an accessory ostium at the level of the posterior fontanelle area. And so the task of a surgical procedure is to remove the polyp, is to connect, to join the natural ostium of the maxillary sinus with the accessory ostium, and then we have to inspect with angle scope the maxillary sinus, and we have to resect the insertion of a polyp at the level of the inferior or lateral posterior of the maxillary sinus. And a type 1 medial maxillectomy is quite enough in the large majority of cases to manage such a kind of inflammatory situation. The type 2 medial maxillectomy entails the resection of the inferior turbinate. Usually, such a kind of procedure is used to manage benign tumor of the maxillary sinus or benign tumor of a pterygopalatine fossa. A paradigmatic case of such a kind of procedure is a case of a 14-year-old boy affected by small juvenile angiofibroma involving the pterygopalatine fossa right side. This is the preoperative MR scan in axial and coronal view. And you can appreciate this lesion involving the pterygopalatine fossa. At that level, as you know, juvenile angiofibroma can be considered as a vascular malformation involving the small vessel of the cancellous bone of the basis phenoid. So in such a kind of lesion, it's mandatory to drill out the bone of the basis phenoid in a so-called transpterygoid approach. To manage such a kind of disease, we have to remove the medial wall of the maxillary sinus, and we have to manage the pterygopalatine fossa. This is the pre-op MR scan, and just below the post-op MR scan. And I show you the video clip of the procedure. Okay, this is a huge juvenile nasopharyngeal angiofibroma. This is the sphenoid sinus right side. This is maxillary sinus, you see. We have to manage this lesion in the pterygopalatine fossa, so we have to remove also the posterior part of the inferior turbinate. We have to remove the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus, exposing the periosteum of the pterygopalatine fossa. We have to cauterize and cut the descending palatine artery, and we have to remove the portion of the tumor involving the pterygopalatine fossa. You see, this is the juvenile angiofibroma involving the pterygopalatine fossa. We have to remove this part of tumor. You see, this is the tumor inside the pterygopalatine fossa. We are lucky because juvenile nasopharyngeal angiofibroma are capsulated tumor, and so it's quite easy to remove it. And finally, we have to drill out the basisphenoid. To perform such a kind of procedure, we have to remove the posterior part of the inferior turbinate to have large access to the pterygopalatine fossa. So type 2 endoscopic endonasal medial maxillectomy is quite enough to manage such a kind of situation. There are other kind of benign tumor that require a little bit expanded procedure. In particular, this is an inverted papilloma involving the medial wall of a maxillary sinus. It's a 66-year-old female patient. As this is preoperative MR scan in axial view and coronal view. As you can see, in this case, inverted papilloma completely involve the medial wall of a maxillary sinus. So the bone of the medial wall is infiltrated by the disease. So in this situation is contraindicated a prolacrimal approach because the tumor involves the medial wall of a maxillary sinus. And so this is an indication for removal, complete removal of the medial wall of a maxillary sinus. Another important thing to keep in mind is that in this case, as you can see, the tumor is just below the nasolacrimal duct. So there is an involvement of the retronasolacrimal duct recess. So in this case, we have to resect the nasolacrimal duct in order to better inspect this hidden area behind the nasolacrimal duct. Because keep in mind, there is no recurrence of inverted papilloma. When you experience a recurrence of inverted papilloma, you can better name this situation as a persistence of inverted papilloma. So recurrence of inverted papilloma are persistences of inverted papilloma. Because if you remove completely the inverted papilloma following the subperiosteal plane and drilling out the bone at the level of insertion of the inverted papilloma, recurrence are basically 0%. So very recently has been introduced also the concept of pedicle-oriented resection of inverted papilloma. That means we have to remove the tumor in a subperiosteal plane and identify exactly the insertion of the inverted papilloma and drill out the bone at that point in order to prevent recurrences, or better, prevent persistences. So in such a kind of disease, type 3A medial maxillectomy, because medial wall is infiltrated and because retrolacrimal recess is infiltrated. So we have to remove completely the medial wall of the maxillary sinus. This is the papillomatous disease. You see, this is papillomatous lesion involving the right nasal fossa. So with the bulk, the mass, abutting in the nasal fossa, and then we harvest the medial maxillectomy. We perform an incision with the diode laser along the maxillary line, and then we get access to the inside maxillary sinus, passing just anterior to the projection of the nasolacrimal duct. This is the inferior incision with diode laser at the level of the floor of the nasal fossa. See, we are drilling up the bone at the level of the floor of the nasal fossa, and then we are removing the medial wall of the maxillary sinus. This is the lesion, the inverted papilloma that involve the maxillary sinus. You see, we have identified exactly the inferior wall of the maxillary sinus that is uninvolved by the disease. This is the healthy mucosa of the lateral wall of the maxillary sinus. You see, healthy mucosa. And then we concentrate our surgery at the level of the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus where the inverted papilloma is attached to. So pedicle-oriented resection means that you can preserve the mucosa at the level of the uninvolved side of the maxillary sinus, while you have to completely remove mucosa and drill out the bone at the level of the insertion of the inverted papilloma. And you see, with a type 3A middle maxillectomy, with removal of medial wall and transection of the nasolacrimal duct, we can exactly manage such a kind of situation. The modification of a type 3A middle maxillectomy is the so-called prelacrimal approach. It's an approach that allows us to get access to the maxillary sinus just anterior to the nasolacrimal duct, but in this case, nasolacrimal duct is skeletonized, transposed, but preserved, and at the end of the procedure is re-put in place with stitches. This is a case of recurrence of inverted papilloma. It's an inverted papilloma operated in another center that has been referred to our tertiary care referral center for a recurrence or persistence, we can say, of inverted papilloma at the level of the alveolar recess, right alveolar recess. You see, small persistence of the disease in the alveolar recess. The medial wall of the maxillary sinus is not involved by the disease. Nasolacrimal duct is not involved by the disease. So we try to remove these, passing anteriorly to the nasolacrimal duct, but preserving the nasolacrimal duct. This is the preoperative MR scan, the panel C, and the panel D is the postoperative MR scan with the lesion completely removed. And you see the medial wall of the maxillary sinus exactly in place, preserved. And so let's start with the video clip of a surgical procedure. Incision at the level of the head of inferior turbinate, you see. After that, we have to do an osteotomy just anteriorly to the projection of the nasolacrimal duct, because we have to enter the maxillary sinus, staying exactly anteriorly to the nasolacrimal duct. You see, this is the nasolacrimal duct. We have entered the maxillary sinus anteriorly to the nasolacrimal duct. We have put the scope inside the maxillary sinus anteriorly to the nasolacrimal duct. And then we can work inside the maxillary sinus passing through this window. We completely remove the mucosa at the level of the floor of the maxillary sinus. We remove the persistence of a benign tumor at the level of the alveolar recess. We drill out the bone at the level of the insertion of the inverted papilloma. You see? We can work simultaneously with two instrumentation through this window anteriorly to the nasolacrimal duct. You see? And at the end of a procedure, the medial wall of the maxillary sinus is reputed in place, and with a stitch, we fixed the head of the inferior turbinate to the piriform aperture, you see, with a stitch. In this case, nasolacrimal duct has been skeletonized, transposed, but preserved. So, prolacrimal approach is a very interesting minimally invasive approach that is emerging in the recent years for selected cases, so very specific indication for such a kind of procedure, okay? However, maxillary sinus can be used as a corridor to approach deep-seated skull-based lesion, for example, at the level of infratemporal fossa of nasopharynx. In such a kind of situation, we have to enlarge our approach laterally. And so, we have to remove also the piriform aperture, perform the so-called type 3B medial maxillectomy. Type 3 because we have an access to the maxillary sinus anterior to the nasolacrimal duct. B because we are removing also the piriform aperture. Because, let's see, if you remove only the medial wall of the maxillary sinus, but keeping intact the piriform aperture, we can have such a kind of access to this infratemporal fossa. But removing also the piriform aperture in the so-called endoscopic endonasal modified anchor approach, we can enlarge our approach, you see, and we can lateralize the fulcrum of our surgical instrumentation. So for managing skull-based lesion of infratemporal fossa, it's mandatory to have a large surgical approach, a large surgical corridor, and with a 0-degree scope, we have to manage laterally. So in such kind of lesion, we have to remove the bone of the piriform aperture, performing the so-called type 3B maxillectomy. You see, removing the piriform aperture, this is the left side maxillary sinus. This is the floor of the nasal fossa, left side. This is the medial wall of the maxillary sinus removed. This is the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus. This is the infraorbital nerve running at the level of the floor of the orbit or roof of the maxillary sinus, of course. And if you remove the piriform aperture in this way, you can work simultaneously with two instruments through the same nasal fossa, you see, and we can manage also lateral area of a maxillary sinus. So for deep-seated skull-based lesion, it's mandatory to perform such a kind of expanded approach with removal of piriform aperture. Of course, such a kind of approach is quite invasive because your patient can have a depression of the nasal ala, because we are removing the bone supporting the nasal ala. So the patient can have some cosmetic deformity of the nasal pyramid, but you have to discuss with your patient perioperatively about this possible complication. And you have also to remember to your patient that such a kind of procedure is a minimally invasive procedure, because to manage deep-seated skull-based tumor, such a kind of this case of nasopharyngeal cancer, if you do not perform a transnasal approach, you have to perform a very expanded approach, such as mid-facial degloving, lateral rhinotomy, we have Ferguson transfacial incision. So, yeah, with such a kind of procedure, you can have depression of a nasal ala, but of course, it's less invasive than traditional external transfacial approaches. So, it's minimally invasive, but with a little bit more morbidity for your patient. That's why you have to select exactly indication for such a kind of procedure. And so the case I'm going to show you is a recurrence of nasopharyngeal carcinoma after chemo radiation. As you know, undifferentiated nasopharyngeal carcinoma are a non-surgical entity that should be treated as a first-line treatment with radiation and chemotherapy. But surgery is important as a salvage procedure in case of persistence or recurrence of cancer after failure of chemo radiation. In this case, the nasopharyngeal cancer involve the posterior wall of the nasopharynx and also the retrotubaric region. And so we have to perform an expanded transmaxillary transpterygoid approach to remove the tumor. You see, this is the cancer involving the nasopharynx in the left side. This is the left side maxillary sinus, you see. Nasal fossa, we completely remove the inferior turbinate and we skeletonize the piriform aperture. In such a kind of procedure, we have to drill out and remove the piriform aperture. And so we perform incision, you see, at the level of the floor of the nasal fossa. This is the piriform aperture, okay? And we are drilling out the piriform aperture. Nasolacrimal duct should be completely removed. Medial wall of the maxillary sinus should be completely removed. Sphenopalatine artery should be cauterized and cut. You see, we are performing such a kind of expanded approach that is quite important to obtain a good surgical corridor to manage nasopharyngeal cancer. I show you only the transmaxillary procedure that is the important things for such a kind of discussion and presentation. You see, removing the piriform aperture, you can remove completely the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus as far as the zygomatic process, and so as far as the lateral wall of the maxillary sinus. Such kind of expanded procedure is mandatory to appropriately and properly manage skull-based cancer like in case of nasopharyngectomy. There are other situations requiring even more expanded approach. The type 4 maxillectomy, transnasal maxillectomy, entails the removal of the medial wall of the maxillary sinus together with the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus, and so also of the piriform aperture, that is the bone connecting the anterior and medial wall. As you can see in this cartoon, medial wall should be completely removed. Piriform aperture, that is the bone connecting the medial wall and anterior wall, should be completely removed. And also we have to remove also the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus as far as the virtual sagittal plane passing through the infraorbital nerve, or even more laterally as far as the lateral wall of the maxillary sinus. Okay? This is a very expanded approach that is indicated only for selected cases. For example, this is a squamous cell carcinoma poorly differentiated involving the maxillary sinus, involving also the premaxillary soft tissues, and involving also the orbit. In presence of poorly differentiated squamous cell carcinoma with sinonasal spaces, the first line treatment is induction chemotherapy in order to select out responders who can be candidate to exclusive radiochemotherapy, and identify patients with less response to induction chemo that should be candidate for surgery followed by radiation. In this case, we obtain a good response to induction chemo, but a persistence of cancer has been left. And so we perform surgery in order to manage the persistence of the disease after chemotherapy. After surgery, the patient will be submitted to adjuvant irradiation with intensity modulated radiotherapy. As you see, induction chemotherapy has been very useful in order for a reduction of the volume of the tumor. We have a good response of tumor at the level of the orbit, the level of the premaxillary soft tissue, but the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus is still involved by the disease. And so we have to perform an expanded approach where the resection should be include not only the medial wall of the maxillary sinus, but also the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus. This is the radiological imaging before induction chemo. This is the radiological imaging after induction chemo, just before our surgical procedure. And this is the CT scan postoperatively. CT scan postoperatively, and as you can see, postoperatively have completely removed the bone of the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus. Okay? So let's start with a video clip. We are in the left nasal fossa. We are removing the inferior turbinate, left side, and then you see we are skeletonizing the piriform aperture, and also we have dissect also the soft tissues from the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus, because we have to remove not only the medial wall, but also the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus. You see, with a cottonoid, we grasp against the bone in order to dissect the mucosa in the subperiosteal plane. Now we are drilling out the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus, and we are going to skeletonize the infraorbital nerve. Okay? This is the junction between anterior and medial wall. We are drilling out the floor of the maxillary sinus, you see? And this is the infraorbital nerve. So we have completely removed the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus, and now we are with a curved drill, we are drilling the lateral wall of the maxillary sinus. You see, we are removing the bone of the lateral wall, the bone that is placed just laterally to the infraorbital nerve course. You see, such a kind of procedure is also called infraorbital nerve transposition, because we are going to skeletonize fully the infraorbital nerve. Okay, so this is the type 4 medial maxillectomy with removal of medial and anterior wall of maxillary sinus. A modification of type 4 has been described by Rick Crow, and is a sort of Caldwell loop procedure performed under endoscopic endonasal assistance. Okay, is a fenestration in the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus, just below the level of the infraorbital nerve, but superiorly to the course of the anterior superior alveolar nerve. Anterior superior alveolar nerve is these small neural branches that branch off from the infraorbital nerve and is responsible for the sensory innervation of the upper teeth. Okay, so we have to preserve these small neural branches in order to avoid and prevent anesthesia of the upper incisors of your patient. This is a case. This is a patient with this intermediate signal in magnetic resonance. This is a patient that has been already operated for an inverted papilloma of the maxillary sinus. And during the follow-up, we have a doubt for recurrence or persistence of disease at the level of the lateral wall of the maxillary sinus. So, in order to check this tissue and understand if this is recurrence or only scar tissue, we perform such a kind of minimally invasive fenestration in the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus in order to take sample. This is the surgery. This is the we are in the left side. Large middle antrostomy has been already performed in the previous surgery. You see? And so we are skeletonizing the piriform aperture. We are dissecting the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus in subperiosteal plane. And we perform such a kind of fenestration in the anterior wall of the sinus. You see, superiorly, there is the inferior alveolar nerve, and inferiorly, the anterosuperior alveolar nerve. So this fenestration is performed in between the two nerves, okay? In between the inferior infraorbital nerve and anterosuperior alveolar nerve, okay? A fenestration in the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus between the two nerves. And as you can see, we can also cooperate from the nasal fossa through the antrostomy, standard antrostomy, and through the fenestration in the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus. At the end of the procedure, we put a stitch at the level of the mucosal incision in order to put in place the middle wall of the maxillary sinus. So this is the classification, and shortly I show you our experience. In more or less 15 years in our tertiary care referral center, we perform 1,378 patients, and the morbidity of this surgical procedure entails epiphora related to the transection of the nasolacrimal duct, some anesthesia of the upper incisors when the anterior superior nerve has been damaged, and in some cases, retraction of the nasal ala with cosmetic problems to the patient, but basically when dealing with sinonasal and scar-based cancer. Of course, when dealing with maxillary sinus disease, pathologies, and tumors, endoscopic endonasal procedure is not the good answer in every case, but there are still some contraindications for endoscopic endonasal procedure. Of course, in case of malignant tumor involving completing the bone of the anterior and inferior wall of the maxillary sinus, and also in case of extensive benign tumor such as multicystic ameloblastoma or myxoid fibroma that entails the destruction and involvement, complete involvement of the bone of the floor of the maxillary sinus. In such kind of cases, total or subtotal maxillectomy is still indicated with osteotomy and in some cases with Weber-Ferguson incision, lateral rhinotomy, or mid-facial deglobing approaches. So these images are, I provide you these images of transfacial incision with a radical maxillary removal that are still indicated in case of extensive cancer involving the floor of the maxillary sinus and involving the hard palate. So such a kind of invasive approaches and mutilating surgery with transfacial incision are still indicated when dealing with locally advanced cancer. Okay, so endoscopic endonasal surgery is a very important step forward in the management of maxillary sinus disease, but there are some cases where they are contraindicated. And the last things I would like to show you is a modification for classical transfacial approaches, because in our group we have developed a new technique for a removal of the maxillary of a maxilla, so the so-called total maxillectomy, combining the transnasal approach with the transoral approach. We perform transnasally the posterior osteotomy, so we drill out the junction between the maxilla tuberosity with the pterygoid plates, and then we perform the anterior and medial osteotomy transorally. In this case, we can perform a sublabial incision of the mid-facial degloving, avoiding facial incision. I would like to show you a case of this innovative procedure. So we combine transnasal approach to do the posterior osteotomy and transoral osteotomy with mid-facial degloving for performing the anterior and medial osteotomy. In this case, we are able to remove completely the maxilla with the teeth and hard palate, avoiding facial incision for the patient. This is a case of persistent osteosarcoma. And in this case, you see, we perform the standard medial maxillectomy transnasally. We drill out the bone at the level of pterygoid plates. In this case, we perform the posterior osteotomy. After that, we harvest the mid-facial degloving procedure. So we perform transvestibular incision at the level of the oral cavity, transvestibular incision at the level of the nasal vestibule. Okay? And in this case, we can remove the maxilla. We can perform the total maxillectomy, avoiding facial incision. You see? Mid-facial degloving procedure, transvestibular incision at the level of the nasal vestibule, at the level of the oral vestibule, and then we can remove completely the maxilla and the hard, and together with the hard palate, avoiding facial incision, and so with better cosmetic results for the patient. You see, we perform the superior osteotomy. In this case, I skip just a little bit the video, superior osteotomy, lateral osteotomy, medial osteotomy. In this case, you see, we are performing all the procedure avoiding facial incision. We have recently published such a kind of technique together with the group of University of Brescia, with Professor Pier Nicolai. We are able to remove completely the maxilla with the hard palate, avoiding facial incision. So I have shown you such a kind of expanded approach only to stress and emphasize the concept that in the minimal invasive era of endoscopic surgery, there are some indications for such a kind of expanded approaches, especially in case of cancer involving the bone of the hard palate. But also when transfacial surgery is indicated, we can decrease the morbidity of our procedure with such a kind of combination of transnasal endoscopic assisted procedure with transoral procedure. After the removal, we reconstruct the hard palate with a free flap of scapular tip. And this is the post-op MR scan. So, in conclusion, we can say that in recent years, endoscopic and nasal procedure have completely changed the perspective of surgery and have completely changed indication for surgery in maxillary sinus. And endoscopic endonasal partial maxillectomy are versatile surgical approaches that can be tailored to the disease of a patient and to the morbidity of the patient. And so we can design exactly the surgical procedure for a given patient in the perspective of patient-based medicine. Thank you very much for the attention and greetings from our institution, University of Insubria, Varese, Italy. And me and my friend Puglia Degani, we are very happy and delighted to invite you in the year HES meeting that will be held next year in Thessaloniki, Greece. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mario, for your presentation, which was very brilliant with many cases, step-by-step procedures, indication and contraindications, which is very, very important. Many people are stressing with new techniques and not focusing on what are the limitations and the limits of surgery. Many people are putting a step forward, but don't think that our limitation that should be pre-planned. Some diseases, like you previously said, as inverted papilloma, are not the recurrence, are just the persistency of diseases. So in order to avoid such cases and scenarios, we have to make a pre-plan, and we have to discuss with the patient, as you said, and tailor every operation in front of such diseases. And I would like to ask a few questions that came from our attendants. The first one is not from the attendants, it's just one thing that I would like to ask you, which I already know the answer. You previously said that this is a so-called, and many people are so calling this a modified Denker approach. But as you already said, the Denker approach meanings of something that goes from oral cavity would not be more appropriate to call this a modified Suhrmann-Camfield approach.
Yeah, it is only a sort a matter of terminology. But yeah. Keep in mind, Suhrmann-Camfield is a transnasal procedure. Denker approach is a transoral procedure. But they do the same thing. So they remove medial wall and anterior wall of the maxillary sinus. Denker from the transoral approach, Suhrmann and Camfield for the transnasal approach. So our endoscopic procedure we can call endoscopic assisted Suhrmann-Camfield.
Yes.
Or modify endonasal Denker procedure. But exactly. It is a matter of terminology. So we can say endoscopic and modify endonasal Denker procedure, or we can say endoscopic Suhrmann-Camfield, because Suhrmann-Camfield is already endonasal, or type 4 endoscopic middle maxillectomy, as already mentioned in our classification.
Perfect. I have a question from one of our colleagues from Egypt, which is asking us, what if the pedicle of an inverted papilloma is in the lateral nasal wall? Would not be enough use of angulated drills without exposing the whole maxilla?
When the pedicle is in the lateral wall of a maxillary sinus?
Yes. So it's I guess that he's asking, what if the pedicle and insertion of the inverted papilloma is in the nasal wall? Would be not just sufficient to make a large antrostomy and goes with an angulated drill?
It depends from the extension of the disease. It's quite important and mandatory to exactly identify the pedicle of the inverted papilloma preoperatively on the radiological images. It's mandatory to perform both CT scan and MR scan preoperatively in order to exactly identify the pedicle of the inverted papilloma before surgery. So before starting surgery, you have to have exactly in mind what to do. You have already identified on radiological exam where is the pedicle, and you have also exactly in mind what kind of procedure to do. If the pedicle is quite easy to identify on the radiological exam, because on CT scan you can identify hyperostotic bone, and when there is hyperostotic bone, this is the area of the pedicle, and so you know this is the area where you have to drill out the bone in order to prevent persistence or recurrence of the disease. So it depends. You can, in some cases of inverted papilloma, you can also use type 1 middle maxillectomy, which is a large antrostomy. But it depends from the location of the pedicle. If the pedicle is small in the upper part of the maxillary sinus, on the medial wall of the maxillary sinus, you can also do type 1. It depends, yes. It depends from the extent of the disease and on the location of the pedicle. And you can anticipate this information analyzing exactly the preoperative radiological exams.
There's another question from Russia, and our colleagues is asking, what if I don't have a laser for make the anterior incision?
Yeah, we use diode laser in our institution, but you can also use monopolar if you want, and also you can use cold incision with a beaver knife, but in this case we have just a little more bleeding, and so it's just a little more time consuming, because then we have to do bleeding control with bipolar. So it depends, of course, much more instrumentation and much more possibilities, technological possibilities you have available in your center is better for your patient, but we have also to deal with some organizing and logistic problems. So diode laser is the best tool to perform the incision, but you can also use monopolar, or also you can do incision in a cold way with cold instrumentation, so with the beaver.
Another question from France, and I would like to just summarize a few questions. I will not ask you all the questions. I just have to be brief with that. This is another question from France, and he's asking, it is mandatory to drill the bone of the pavement of the sinuses if the lesion is in a junction between the lateral wall and the nasal floor?
It depends from the lesion. Once again, if you are dealing with a benign tumor, if you are dealing with the inverted papilloma, we have to drill out only the area of the pedicle.
He's asking, in this situation, he's asking that you previously said about an anthroquinal polyp. What if in this case?
Oh, no. In anthroquinal polyp, you have not to, it's not mandatory to drill out. In anthroquinal polyp, inflammatory disease, only we have to follow the subperiosteal plate and just enough, and that is done for inflammatory disease. For benign tumor, usually we have to drill out the area of the pedicle, insertion pedicle. Different story is for cancer. For cancer, we have to drill out the bone in order to do an expanded approach.
Sure.
So once again, tailored procedure based on the pathology we are dealing with.
The last question is from myself. You remember that I was asking you and some support for my case, which was an inverted papilloma, which was arising from the lateral wall. But in this case, the patient was also having an anterior wall disruption and disconnection. I perform as planned with you a complete removal with a piriform aperture drill out procedure, and the patient is fine. And I just want to ask you, what are your planning postoperatively as a follow up procedure in these cases? How much time, and every now and then you're watching these patients?
Yeah. We are discussing about inverted papilloma,
yes.
Correct? Yeah, for inverted papilloma, in this case, we have two tools for follow-up the patient. The first one is the endoscopic endonasal examination. Endoscopic endonasal examination should be performed monthly in the first months after surgery in order to promote the healing of the mucosa of the surgical cavity, remove the crusting, the nasal crusting, and promote the mucosal healing. Once the mucosal healing is done, you can follow your patient with endoscopic inner examination every 3 months for the first year, and then every 6 months for at least 5 years. And together with the endoscopic inner examination, we have also to follow your patient with MR scan. MR contrast enhanced MR scan of the maxillofacial district should be performed every 6 months for at least 3 or 5 years. After that, you're dealing with a benign tumor, is enough. Also because when dealing with inverted papilloma, recurrence, that which can be better called as persistence, are visible in the first years of follow-up. So 5 years is enough of follow-up.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Mario, for your presentation. We discussed the whole procedure from history to classification to cases, different scenarios and advanced techniques. I'm really glad that you also supported the bibliography and different articles in the literature. So it was very, very good. As you previously said, we would like to invite you for the next ERS meeting, which is going to be in Thessaloniki next June. As I was part of the ERS Junior Board, and now Dr. Mario Turri is part of the Junior Board, we would like to invite you for the Junior Board session, and keep continuing to following also the dissection courses and the post-university program, which are being provided from the University of Insubria. Thank you, Dr. Mario Turri Zanoni, for participation, and I would like to invite you for the next meeting, which is going to be 1st of June with Pavel Surda from London. Thank you, Mario, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye.